through this letter that Paul cared a whole lot about these folks. And these were folks, I mean, we come to church and you probably didn't think anything about coming to church. I mean, no one probably questioned you. Going to church? Let me throw some stones at you. I mean, the people at Philippi faced extraordinary persecution for their faith. Just to believe, they were persecuted. And Paul wrote these words, apparently, in prison, in chains, with a sentence to die. So that's the context. Here's a guy in prison, chains around his ankles, writing to a people that he loved who experienced persecution every single moment of their days. And he has the audacity to write, "Rejoice in the Lord always, always. I will say it again. Rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication," which is a word for a sense of humility, "and with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding and comprehension, that peace will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do this through Him who gives me strength." There's something powerful and authentic about being grateful when there's not much to be grateful about. There's something powerful and authentic. I mean, it's one thing to be grateful in the good times where it's easy to kind of list those blessings. They just roll off the tongue. It's a whole other thing to be grateful in the not so good times. There's something magnificently defiant, profoundly faithful about gratitude in adversity. What I want to call today, fierce gratitude. Now, this is not Pollyanna gratitude, you know, that just kind of pretends that all is well and all is rosy. I mean, I always think positive thinking in some ways is, I like to say, is like changing your shirt when you really need a shower. You know, it doesn't always work for me to stand in my garden and do affirmations. I'm a big believer in affirmations. But it doesn't always work for me to stand in my garden and say, "There are no weeds. There are no weeds." I have to face the reality of my weeds. And maybe what I'm grateful for, perhaps, is the strength to pull them up. So fierce gratitude to me doesn't deny the realities of life. Fierce gratitude to me is that which gives us the strength to face the realities of life. Paul, "I've learned to be content in any and all situations, and I can do this through Him who gives me strength." He said, "I've learned the secret to being content. I've learned the secret to having that peace that's not rational, that's beyond logic. So what's the secret? I don't know. Maybe it's grace. Maybe it's grace. Grace is the undeserved gift of life. How many of you thought about that this morning? Who said we deserve it? The breath we just took, the undeserved gift of life. Grace is the undeserved gift of God's unconditional love that is always present. You know, that blows me away when I think of grace. It's something I can't really get my mind around, this whole sense that I'm loved. I don't have to prove it. I don't have to earn it. I don't have to work for it. Broken, messed up, Stephen Kosky is loved. I get a glimpse of that every now and then. It was Paul who said, what's the secret? It was Paul who said, there is nothing. There is nothing in life. There is nothing in all creation. There is nothing in life or death that can ever separate us from God's love. Nothing. That's grace. Joy, maybe, is knowing it. It's a huge difference between joy and happiness. You know, we often think the two are similar. Happiness, I suspect, is often kind of connected with the realities of our life, the circumstances of our life, the externals. Our happiness tends to kind of ebb and flow, come up and down, come and go based on what's going on around us. Joy is different. Joy isn't, oh, isn't life great? Because it often isn't. But I wonder if joy is that sense deep down that even though things may not be okay, it's the knowledge that I'm okay. That I'm okay. Grace is that love that is always with us. Maybe joy is knowing it. And gratitude is the spirit and the practice that opens our eyes and our hearts to that gift, to that awareness. So grace is the undeserved gift of life, the undeserved gift of God's love. Joy is the experience every now and then when we get a glimpse, we just know it deep down inside. And maybe gratitude is the practice that opens us to the knowledge of that gift. We don't get time to celebrate Thanksgiving. I mean, the stores opened on Thanksgiving Day this year. We're already rushing to Christmas. I need a moment. Didn't Jerry Seinfeld say that? I need a moment. I just need a moment to stop and pause in gratitude before I rush, even into Advent. I need to catch my breath. We just celebrated Thanksgiving. I think we forget sometimes in the celebration of Thanksgiving how brutal that first winter was for the Mayflower Pilgrims. Historians will tell us that less than half survived their first winter. Less than half. Historians say that only three families, there were only three families that were spared from digging graves in the rocky New England soil to bury husband, wife, child. by springtime, there wasn't one person who didn't experience the ravages of despair and loss and disease. Not one person by springtime. So I want you to imagine there you are in your small little hovel, and it's cold and you're not really prepared for this kind of winter. And you're watching those that you love perish by forces that are outside of your control. To me, what's miraculous about Thanksgiving is that somehow in the midst of all of that, there was gratitude. That somehow, somewhere, they chose gratitude over bitterness. Community over isolation. I mean, the only reason, we forget this part in our history book, the only reason they survived is that their native neighbors gave them corn. It's the only reason any of them survived. With apologies to Hallmark and apologies to my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Nichols, who I think got it all wrong, I think it's important to remember that first Thanksgiving, those gathered around the table were haggard survivors, weak and thin, probably just wearing rags that were left from this work that they weren't prepared for, carrying unbelievable grief and loss. So to me, what's really important, what's spiritually important before we rush to Christmas, is to pause and realize in the midst of all of that backdrop of misery, they chose gratitude. Scholars say there was a big debate going on. One camp said to mark the first anniversary of arriving in America, one camp wanted a service of mourning. And who could blame them? Another camp wanted a service of gratitude. Historians suggest, was that a hint? Historians suggest it was choosing gratitude that actually gave them the strength to face the challenges that were yet to come. It was their choice of gratitude that actually allowed them to tap into a strength greater than themselves. Paul says, I can face this through the one who strengthens me. Gratitude, that practice of gratitude. William Bradford, the governor, wrote in his journal, he wrote, the only thing that has sustained us is God's presence. So they not only stopped to give thanks to the harvest that finally came, they not only stopped to give thanks to the generosity of their native neighbors who gave them the corn that they would not have survived without, they stopped to give thanks to God. And that God's love reached into the very depths of hell that they were experiencing and gave them a strength beyond their own strength. I love the story of the father and the little boy who's 4 came home from the memorial service of wife and mother who died of cancer. And they're laying in bed. The father's back was to the little boy, heartbroken, no words. And they were laying there what seemed like forever. And the father just numb. And the little boy couldn't sleep. And finally the little boy said, "Daddy, Daddy, if you turn and face me, I think I can fall asleep." So he turned and he faced his son and he held him. And it wasn't long before the little boy was fast asleep. At which point the father's heart just poured out to God and said, "God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what we will do. But if you turn and face me, we'll get through this." Ultimately, that's the mystery that we dare to hold on to. Revealed in Jesus, that God has turned God's face towards us. And it's the face of love. I've met many amazing pilgrims. There are many amazing pilgrims sitting right here this morning. Those pilgrims who respond to just unspeakable tragedy and challenge with this incredible courage and this fierce, fierce gratitude. There are many sitting right next to you. There's one pilgrim I'll never forget. His name was Ian. Ian, 24 years old. Young, strong construction worker. Love of life. Just this fierce love of life. Lived in Adelaide, Australia. And one day in the shower, he fell, struck down by this rare degenerative neurological disease that was destroying every muscle in his body. And a mutual friend asked me to visit Ian in the Royal Adelaide Hospital. And by this time, Ian had been confined to a bed for 2 years. All that was left, able to move, this disease just kind of ravages his entire body. All that was left were the movement of his eyes. He was on a respirator because the disease destroyed his chest muscles that allowed us to breathe. There were a few neck muscles, so he was able to just say a few words by constricting the muscles on his neck. Now, when I was approaching this visit, I hadn't met Ian. I didn't know really the fullness of his story. This friend just asked me to go see him. I just faced this with a lot of fear and trepidation, because here was how could a young man at the prime of his life, struck down by such a senseless tragedy, not be sad and embittered? And what could I possibly offer as comfort? Well, what I didn't know is that Ian's 10-foot by 15-foot room in the Royal Adelaide Hospital was the epicenter of spiritual life and social life of the 2,000-bed hospital. I had no idea at this particular time. I had no idea that Ian refused, even though he was physically paralyzed, he refused to be emotionally and spiritually paralyzed. Ian shared with me, one of the things I will just forever remember is he said, "This tragedy has taught me so profoundly about the power of choice. I used to ask, why me? Why me?" And he said, and he also communicated in ways beyond his voice, he said, "Who can't ask that question? Who doesn't ask that question? How could you not ask that question?" But he said, "I eventually got to that place of, rather than why me, why not me?" Now, I don't think he said I deserved this. I don't. I don't think it's God's will. Nor do I necessarily think I deserve the gift of every breath. Nor do I necessarily think I deserve the gift of life. Nor do I think I necessarily deserve all of this love that surrounds me. And Ian went on to say, I recognized the power to choose. I had to choose to face my pain and my sorrow. But he said, in facing the darkness of the night, I was surprised to find God there. And it was God who allowed me to take the first step into the sunrise. Isn't that beautiful? From a guy who can't move. Now, Ian went on to say, you know, it's not loss and challenges that define us, but how we respond to them. And his room was always filled with visitors. I was amazed. Every time I went to see him, which was for about a 2-year period, it was always filled with people, particularly his huge, I swear to God, he had 15 brothers and sisters. He was from a large Catholic family, and there was always cards and flowers and doodads and laughter. I've never experienced so much laughter in my life. Ian had a rule. In order to get through the door, you had to come with a joke. And preferably the most off-color joke you could possibly come up with, which was, I'd like to say it was a challenge for me, but it really wasn't. But and it was just so much laughter, and you would think all of the focus would be on Ian. Ian was one of those who would take a little time about himself, but then he wanted to know about my day, my challenges, my struggles, my ideas, my dreams. That 10-foot by 15-foot room was the holiest space I think I've ever been in. And as I look back now at the mutual friend who asked me to visit, I realized my friend knew I was the one who needed that relationship. Ian chose to live his life so fully and vibrantly in spite of his circumstances. Not trivializing at all his disease and the tragedy. But he chose gratitude over bitterness. He chose community over isolation. He chose laughter over tears. He chose hope over despair. He chose life over death. What was his secret? I don't know. What I know is that he treasured every breath. Every breath. He treasured the gift of life. And he tried to live it, even within the confines of his situation, he tried to live it as fully as he could. And what I know is that he knew that he was held in the embrace of God's love. And he knew that that love would never let him go. This past Thursday, we paused to remember those brave pilgrims enveloped by grief and sorrow, who chose fierce gratitude. I think the spiritual challenge of our lives is to live every day as pilgrims. To choose gratitude. To choose life. A grateful heart is a peaceful heart. Is a loving heart. May it be so.